Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. It's like playing Twister. It's like playing Twister. Thanks for being here. Deal is near on a bill to boost construction of smaller Arizona homes, according to a sponsor. I've got a bunch of things in front of me, and a lot of the headlines, discussion on a housing bill underway, study finds that renting is cheaper than buying in all 50 American states, home prices in Phoenix are ticking back up, should you rent instead? All of these questions. I will tell you that we know that it is supply and demand. There is a reason why, and it's been this way for a long time, depending on where you live in the country. One of the most expensive zip codes now in America is Coral Gables in near Miami in South Florida. It is becoming as expensive as Beverly Hills. You are saying, if you, and this is for all of you out there that have come here from California, most of you know this, if you were to buy the same home here that you bought in California, you're going to pay a lot less for a long time. But as this becomes a destination, as we start seeing home prices increase, it is going to happen. That's part of the market and how it works. But affordability is supply and demand as well. And so when you have the average, and it's got to be about in the minds of many, the average income of people, we are seeing incomes go up. But there are a lot of people that are hardworking people in jobs that are good, solid jobs that are not going anywhere. You know, if you look, we always talk about cops, firefighters and teachers because they're public servants, and we should. But just let's take a look at them, not in the job they're doing, but the security of that job. A new cop, a new firefighter, a new teacher. These are people that are in career paths. If they want to stay in them, job security is very high for them. Very high in their jobs. They're jobs that are in demand. They are jobs where there is advancement that's possible. All of that is true. But at the entry level, they're not making huge money. But if you've got someone that is a professional, usually with a college degree, if you're a teacher, if you're a firefighter or a cop, most of the time, these are college educated people. These are reliable people with a solid income. They're just at an entry level income. Now, it may be higher than entry level in other places, but it's an entry level income. Why wouldn't the smart investor, the smart developer, want to develop something going after groups of people like that? I don't care if you've just graduated with an engineering degree and you're going to work as a, you know, kind of an entry level engineer at TSMC or out at Intel in the East Valley, wherever it is. Why is it that there's a market out there and that we're not allowing it to be served? There's a bill in the legislature. It's House Bill 2721, and part of what they want is the agreement would require cities to permit up to 20% of those smaller multifamily missing middle homes in any home development of 10 acres or more, comprised of compromise will apply to 15 cities and have 75,000 or more residents. So this is a bill in the legislature. It is going to allow for a market that everybody I talk to in this industry, I talk to the vice president from Shea Homes, who's been on the show a number of times. These are people that are building very nice big homes in master plan communities. They have a stellar reputation, like a lot of developers do, like a lot of them. We have good builders here in Arizona, and they have good reputations. They're saying there's a market. You have independent developers. These are people. I was just last night at a group. With a group of people, and it's a group of people that want to do, they're civic minded business leaders. Many of them are CEOs, but this is business minded leaders. And I was there with Mike Noble from Noble Predictive Insights, and we were kind of the subject of question and answers. It was a very interesting event. But you have people in this room that are in specific industries that find a need in an industry, that find a niche in an industry, and then they excel at it. And that's what smart business people do. We were at a restaurant called Santo. It's a great place, 44th Street in Osborne, and it's brand new, but it is amazing. And what it's done is, and it's only been there for a couple of months, and I think it's going to be a stellar restaurant in the neighborhood. And why? Because first of all, you have a chef, a restaurateur that's been successful in other restaurants around the valley, so he knows how to be successful. They found an area of town with a lot of disposable income. Arcadia is a lot of disposable income, and they found an area where there wasn't a lot of people, there wasn't really anybody doing what they're doing. It is a recipe for success. That doesn't mean it's absolutely going to be successful, but they have everything there to be successful, and you can tell they did their homework. They're different than anything else in the neighborhood. They're in a neighborhood that has disposable income and likes to eat out, and they've got a reputation of success in other places. And so when you look at developers, there's people in a room, you've got people of means, people that have money and they're willing and able to invest. And you say to them, here, look at this market. You've got young cops and young firefighters and young teachers and all of these kids graduating from ASU's engineering program and other programs. You know, you've got the W.P. Carey School of Business. You have, Cronkite. You have all of these really good schools at ASU. U of A has got a major campus downtown. So the college educated crowd, instead of getting your education and sprinting for other states, is what's happened 30 years ago when I moved here. If you got a degree from ASU, you could not wait to get out of Arizona. There was really nothing for you. Now there is so much more for you as a young professional. And all of the opportunity that's out there for a builder that has a target. And they say, you know what? If you are right now a college junior, you've got 2 years of college left, which means probably in 4 years, you're going to be looking to buy your first home. Get into your career, save a little bit of money, start looking around. Well, in 4 years, we're going to have 20 homes built right in that market. There's no way out in the world that there aren't people out there that think that way. Long term, here's what we can do in these neighborhoods. We can build this, 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 and this. And one of the things we can do with 20% of our homes are smaller homes on smaller lots. It is the most incredible thing, and the market is starving for it. I don't know why, and this isn't a criticism, it's an honest question. I have no idea why the governor vetoed the bill that would have allowed for this. I think it was a bad idea. I understand. I guess I know why. I understand not taking away the development rights and the way to design a city from the individual cities. But the cities aren't budging, and there's not a lot of pressure being put on them to budge. And once I'm telling you, this is how this always works. The first place that does it, and it does it successfully, it will then take off everywhere else, because that's what you do. If you're a home builder, you're looking for something unique. If you're an automobile manufacturer, you're looking for something unique. Ford has the Mustang. Chevy has the Corvette. You're looking for something that's a signature. But then every once in a while, when the SUV came into fruition and all these, when the minivan came out, it used to be a station wagon. When these changes happened, once it was successful, everybody copied it. And here we have an opportunity, not just an opportunity for a bunch of people to make a bunch of money, but to solve a problem, to alleviate a problem. And we're seeing resistance, and I hope that these bills pass, and I hope we don't see resistance as we've been seeing it in the past. In a moment, we are going to talk about immigration. Immigration has set a record for the consecutive months that it has been considered a top issue by voters. We're going to talk about what it is and some of the other details next.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, the 2024 Phoenix Go Red for Women Luncheon takes place May 3rd at the JW Marriott Scottsdale Camelback Inn Resort and Spa. Join us. We go red for women. Visit heart.org/PHXGoRed to learn more or to register. The topic of immigration is one we are on quite often, but this is fascinating to me. Immigration ranks as a top issue. I'm not saying the top, but a top issue. I'm reading a headline. For Americans, for longest consecutive monthly stretch in the past 24 years. So this is Americans ranked immigration as the most important problem facing the U.S. for the third month straight. This new Gallup poll shows. I had this conversation last night about immigration. I was talking with some people, and I'm hearing more and more stories. Had a conversation with a woman last night from Mexico. Brilliant, brilliant woman. Built a business, very successful business. She's an immigrant to this country and has been fighting for almost two decades for a green card and the ability for citizenship. Again, legally in the United States, starts a business, very successful, hiring Americans, paying taxes, thriving business and industry, having a difficult time getting permanent residency and a green card into the U.S. Concerns of deportation for a very long time. You mirror that against what other people are seeing, and what other people are seeing, the American eye is seeing people storming the border at some times, making demands, getting free shelter and clothing and food, and had an easy pathway into the U.S. There's a reason why so many Americans are in favor of mass deportations. There's a reason why the American people are souring on the topic of immigration in general. And it's because of this conflict. The American people, we are all immigrants. We all came, our parents, our ancestors at one time or another came here from somewhere else. So we understand if you're not someone that's friends with a first generation immigrant, you should know that. Let me tell you about the room I was in yesterday, and I'm not naming names. There are people there that have a guy in the room just became a citizen within the last couple of months. A woman in the room just got her green card, been fighting for almost two decades to get it. Other people, immigrants to this country, becoming citizens. These are very successful people. These are people that have done well for themselves and lived the American dream. That is the American dream. These are the people that are going to save this country. In the meantime, and I don't know where all of them stand on the topic of illegal immigration, but the American people, this is not Republicans, this is the American people now, are looking at this and saying this is a serious crisis and nothing is being done. Americans, this is the downside of this. A majority of Americans say they believe people are trying to immigrate to the U.S. today have worse character than those who came 50 years ago. So they think poorly of the immigrants that are coming here. Now, is that accurate? Probably not. But the view is when people came here decades ago, when people came half a century ago, when they came to this country 50 years ago, they came here to assimilate. That doesn't mean you become exactly like us. It means you assimilate in. You bring your culture with you and you assimilate and you become an American. They had a respect for American laws and they had a respect for work ethic and they wanted to work hard. And when they were successful and they became successful, they accredited the American way of life. They said, you know, this is a credit to what you can do in the U.S. I was the same hard worker in Cuba. I was the same hard worker in Mexico or wherever you came from. But here I was able to see success I couldn't see in the country I came from. And the Americans now are looking at this and saying that's not who's coming here now. There are people that are coming here now. They're jumping on TikTok and they're making demands of the American people. You've got one guy that came here that was getting on TikTok and giving people instructions on how to squat in somebody else's property and making demands. You have immigrants in New York City that are rioting because they're being thrown out of hotels and they're being put in tents. Americans are souring on immigration. Here's another headline. Three illegal immigrant child sex offenders captured while entering Texas in a single weekend. Again, not the norm, but it is happening. This is the fight that we are talking about. It is incredible. And when you look at what the policies are of the administration, and we're going to get into, and we have gotten into, but again, we'll get in a little bit later to the topic of what's happening in the Middle East. But the Biden administration is contemplating Palestinian refugees in the U.S. And if you look at what that means, it's fascinating. I believe, again, we should be a nation of refuge. I certainly don't pigeonhole everyone. I don't believe that every Palestinian is a terrorist. I don't believe that at all. But there's a reason why Egypt isn't taking in Palestinian refugees. Egypt is the neighbor of Gaza. Gaza's southern border is Egypt's northern border. There are other Arab countries around there. They're not taking in Palestinian refugees. You can talk about the plight of the Palestinian people. You can talk about starvation. You can talk about really difficult circumstances and all of those things. The easy pathway to that is not just getting aid in, which is getting in. Hamas is just taking it, is what's happening. But it is the other Arab nations around there, other nations that could easily open their doors to refugees, have flat out refused. With the immigration problem we have in the U.S., now the Biden administration is setting up to do this as well. What's the vetting process going to be like? It is, again, an issue that it's not me. It's not right wing talk radio. This is every American is looking at this situation and saying it is absolutely a crisis. And how do we fix the crisis? In a moment, we're going to go back to schools. There is a middle school principal in Connecticut that has banned cell phones. And of course, people lost their minds, but he stuck to his guns and it's working. We're going to talk about schools and discipline and the possibility of fixing a problem. We're going to get to that coming up here in just a moment.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate you spending some time with us on the show. Great headline here, how a Connecticut middle school won the battle against cell phones. We generationally, and we have to look at it that way, generationally, things are just different. And I found out the hard way by getting older. As we get older, we talk about how things used to be, sometimes in a good way, sometimes in a bad way, but there is always a comparison to how it was. Sometimes things are much better now. This is so much better than how it used to be, and sometimes it isn't. I didn't grow up with cell phones. I remember the first generation of the cell phone. I remember getting a vehicle and having, used to have a transmitter or transponder mounted under the driver's seat of a vehicle, and then they ran a cord under the carpet, and it had to be hard mounted, and you picked it up like a telephone. It had a cord on it and everything. There was no mobile phone that you got out of the car with. And I had the really cool feature in my vehicle, if any of you remember this, that when I'd be on a job site, if my phone would ring, if somebody called me on my cell phone, my horn would honk to tell me that my phone was ringing. So that was the coolest feature of the day. And you paid by the minute for a cell phone plan, and your minute started the minute you hit send. All those things were how it's changed dramatically. We used to pay for long distance phone calls and all that stuff. But now there's a difference, and it has always been about getting students' attention. It's always about attention span. There are a lot of questions out there about how do we keep students' attention and what are the things that are distracting them? What are some things that are great things? We understand with the advent of Wi-Fi and everything else, to have textbooks on tablets, it makes it easier to send things to the teacher and to have everything in the palm of your hand. I think it's a terrific invention. We also understand that kids are captivated by the devices. My nieces and my nephew, just great kids. They are amazing young human beings. And the last one still in school is my nephew. He is a junior in high school, or a sophomore in high school. And just getting ready to graduate from his sophomore year and move on to his junior year. But he is one that's, he's a gamer, and him and his friends his whole life, this kid, it's almost as if he's attached to that controller. He can do things. I don't play video games, but this kid is just a genius at it, and he's great at it. And that's how his friends communicate. They've got the headsets. They talk to each other. They always have devices in their hands, and that's the way they've grown up. But when you're in a school setting and it's distracting, it becomes a problem for educators. And what are you going to do? Especially when it is not an addiction. I don't want to get crazy with the word addiction, but it becomes such a part of your life. And then a teacher says, no, we're putting the cell phones away. And this principal in Manchester, Connecticut, named Raymond Dolphin, said, we're done. We're done with cell phones. The students were using the devices in class despite a rule against it. Social media was exacerbating nearly every conflict among students. And when he walked the hallways and surveyed the cafeterias, he inevitably saw heads bent over screens. So in December, he did something unusual. He banned cell phones. So this was at a middle school. It sparked objections from students and some parents, but it's already generated profound and unexpected results. He likened prohibiting cell phones to curbing consumption of sugary foods. He said, in a matter of months, you start feeling better. I'm going to read on. What unfolded at the school reflects a broader struggle underway in education as some administrators turn to increasingly drastic measures to limit the reach of technology that is both ubiquitous and endlessly distracting. So just a description of this principal is so funny. Dolphin, who's 45 years old, wears rectangular glasses and carries a walkie-talkie in his belt. He became a teacher right out of college, made a detour into banking, and turned to education a decade ago. The reason why I'm telling this story or asking this question more than anything else is as we've talked about what we can do to improve reading and math scores. Are we with our kids? You know, my grandkids were the ones for me that opened my eyes to this. When my oldest grandson wasn't even talking yet, he was able to on my tablet. I had a tablet at the time. I used a tablet at the house, and he would sit on my lap, and he could go on the screen of the tablet, swipe the screen to see where his games on the tablet were, click on the icon for his tablet, and then play games that were whatever age appropriate for a 2-year-old is. But he could navigate that device instinctively. It was amazing. He has grown up, all of them have grown up with devices of some kind as a part of their lives. So we know that it is a tool that can be used for great things. But when we also know that there are times, every time we travel, when it's fun, I have fun when I go home and I visit when my nieces and all of them were much younger and they all were in school and we jump in the vehicle and we go to dinner together or we would drive somewhere to do something. It was quiet in the car because everybody had in headphones. Everybody was buried in their own phone. So my brother and my sister-in-law and I, we would talk, but the kids were just lost in their individual worlds on those cell phones. I'm not even calling it a bad thing. It's an observation. You're just lost in your own world. There is no connection. When my nephew and his buddies are on video games and they're talking into the headphones, it's not like we used to go play outside. Again, the good old days. Not a condemnation. It's just that's how things are different. The human connection is in a different way now. Social media means a lot more to a young person than it does to me. I joked about this last night when I spoke with this group, and I said, I don't care what Slappy 687 on Twitter says about me, because in my mind, Twitter's not a real place. I don't live in Twitterville or Xville. I don't live there. But our children do. Our children communicate where you and I on a Friday night would jump in a car. For us, we all hung out at a place called the Bell Tower. It was the movie theater parking lot at the Bell Tower. The Bell Tower was a mall. And so there would be 100 kids just parked. Cops didn't have a problem because everybody was in one place. If there was going to be a problem, the cops knew exactly where it was going to be, and there was rarely problems. But that was the gathering place. We gathered together. That didn't mean I talked to 100 different people. But everybody was at that place. When we were younger than that, it was at the skating rink, but it was communal and it was one-on-one, person-to-person contact. Now it's these chat rooms and all of these different groups that people are in, and they live in that world. A condemnation and an insult where if you had somebody start a fight with you, it was one-on-one in person and the fight was down. And your parents would say to you, what are you doing? Who cares what somebody else says about you? When it happens to a young person on social media, when it happens on their device, you might say, they aren't even talking to you. It's just somebody online. Ignore it. Well, everybody's there. Everybody hears it, and that's where they live. So if that kind of distraction is happening in school, it's like passing notes. It's like other things we did. We passed physical pieces of paper and notes. They send text messages and messages on apps. And so is this something that schools ought to be looking into? Should schools and districts have the right to ban cell phone use during a class? And if it's violated, what's the punishment? I just think this is terrific. I think it's a great way to look at things. What we're going to do in just a moment is we're going to talk about immigration. But here's a different study. The controversial program where immigrants are being flown by the administration to different parts of the country. Where are they going? We're going to talk about that coming up here in just one moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
I was talking with a friend of mine, said a woman that hurt his pride. Told him that you loved him so, and turn around and let him go. Then he said, you better watch your step, or you're gonna get hurt yourself. Someone's gonna tell you lies, cut you down to size. Don't do me like that.
Sometimes you just got to let the music play. You know what I'm saying? One of those days. So we talked about immigration a few moments ago. We're going to talk more about it later. It's a big topic nationally, and it's a big issue, and it's one that needs to be solved, and we want to talk about solutions. But here's part of the problem as well. I want you to think about this. How critical was the administration and others of Governor Ducey of Arizona, Governor Abbott of Texas, and Governor DeSantis of Florida? How dare you bus and fly people across the country? How dare you use people as pawns? How dare you make politics out of this? The Department of Homeland Security documents reveal where paroled migrants under controversial flight program are landing. The Department of Homeland Security is revealing the more than 45 cities in the U.S. that hundreds of thousands of migrants have flown into via a controversial parole program from four nationalities, with the vast majority entering the U.S. Listen to this, is incredible. During an 8-month period from January through August of 2023, almost 200,000 migrants flew into the U.S. These are not people that walked across the border and then were bused and flown. They were flown from countries outside of the U.S. Of those, 80% of them arrived in the state of Florida. And let it sink in. You want to talk about the political battle? You want to talk about somebody giving you the political finger? This is what they're talking about. The top 15 cities for migration: Miami is number one, Fort Lauderdale is number two, Orlando is number five, Tampa is number seven. They are flying them all over the country, but the majority of them were into airports into Florida. So Governor DeSantis takes a heat, and he's this right-wing this, and he's running for president, and he's using people as political pawns. These are people that are illegal immigrants into this country. We make a deal. We are flying at taxpayer expense people from these countries into the U.S., into cities where they're being dropped off for the residents of Florida to take care of. Some of the flights are going to Dallas. Some of them have gone to New York. So when Governor Ducey took heat for busing or flying people into New York City, and so did Governor Abbott into Chicago, the White House has been doing this now for an extended period of time. The cost of the migrant crisis: Denver hospitals are buckling under the volume of patients. This is the other part of this that is frustrating. I, like all of you, are concerned about the plight of humanity. I think all of us have that in our hearts. We see homelessness, we feel horrible and wish we could do something. We don't want to do the wrong things. We understand the problems that lead to it sometimes, addiction, which we don't want to feed, all of these other things, but we are concerned and it breaks our hearts. When we see hunger, especially young children that are hungry, we want to help, we want to do something. When we see the plight of people that are coming from other countries, we completely understand and we feel for them. But if you look at what's happening, the services, we work very hard as a nation. I'm going to narrow that. We work very hard as a community to take care of people in our community, addressing the issue of homelessness, supporting organizations like St. Vincent de Paul, who is partnering with the city of Phoenix in transitional housing. How they also have created more beds for the summertime so there are less people exposed to the heat, and more private transitional housing on their campuses to get people from the streets into a home and being self-sustaining. Organizations like St. Mary's Food Bank, who I talk about often, and feeding hungry people as we speak at different locations across the city of Phoenix, across this valley. St. Mary's Food Bank has volunteers packing emergency food boxes to make sure they keep up with demand. They have other volunteers that are putting them in trunks of cars to make sure families have the food they need to sustain themselves until they get paid again. And they do it because of the kindness of you, because of the kindness of this community. We lift each other up. It is part of what is good about all of us, is lifting each other up and doing good. And so it is not the wrong way to feel to say our hospitals, the hospital in Denver is collapsing. So you think about a major city like Denver, and now you think about the Yuma Regional Medical Center. You think about a part of the state that is not overly populated. It's not a wealthy area. And all of what they've done, because it's near, it's a border community, and what they've done with hundreds of millions of dollars. And when you hear complaints from Arizona, and then you're called xenophobic, this is where the problem lies. And it is a problem. It is a big, big problem, and it's one that needs to be addressed. So the politics of this goes a long way with a lot of different people, and it needs to be recognized. So it is a big, big issue. What we're going to do coming up in the next hour, at 10:05, we have been doing this. We're going to continue to do it. We're going to do our ballot breakdown. Subscribe to the KTAR News YouTube channel. You're going to see a lot of videos and interviews, and things are available there. We want you to be the most informed voter you can throughout this election cycle. We're going to talk about RFK Jr. and his impact on the election. How big will that impact be? That's what we're going to talk about in just a few moments. Stick around.